me on the show, first of all.
You're very welcome.
And let me just dispel any rumors and myths. Climate change is actually real.
Really?
Yeah. No, yeah, I just wanted
to,
like,
go figure, Michael.
Well, and we,
I know that people have been
it.
Wondering about it, but let me just, I can, as, you know, as like, as a non-scientist, I can say it
it's
is
happening around
actually
us.
Happening all around us.
And would you
us.
Say it's just natural evolution? Or could humans have something to do with it? I think that's one of the really big issues, too. For some reason, I don't get it. But
what do we know is the leading causes of what we know as climate change?
Yeah. You know, what I would say is if you look at the polls, it shows like a relatively slim majority of Americans believe in climate change. But I really think a lot of people are kind of engaging in that suspended disbelief, partially because of a feeling of well, what could I do about it? Mm-hmm. So it's easier to listen to the people that are saying that it's not real or that it's just a theory when you feel hopeless about it. And that's like, you know, where groups like us come in, where our core mission is to confront the root causes of climate change and organize in a non-hierarchical anti-oppression framework. So we kind of are trying to bring that, like, this is what you can do about it, into, you know, some of that awareness out into the world.
You know, Democracy Now! Was just talking earlier this morning with producers of a new program that's going to be starting on Showtime called Years of Living Dangerously, which is in fact going to be a cable show on Showtime. I think they said they had 9 episodes ready to roll for I guess that's a season now, 9 weeks on mm-hmm. Showtime. And it's going to be starting this Sunday. It's got people like James Cameron and Matt Damon and Harrison Ford and Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, going around the world and checking out issues of climate change, looking at what's going on and trying to actually get action around, you know, stopping the particular mechanisms that they're looking at. They were talking about some issues in Indonesia on the show. And so I'm like, this is getting more and more into public consciousness. And one of the things that that really resonated with me when I was listening was, she said, you know, people can just see it. It's happening all around us. It's happening now. It's not like happening. It's not like one of those things where we're going to say, yeah, it's going to start soon. Because we notice really intense changes in weather patterns that we have all been reliant on. The weather's superstorms have certainly started. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We've seen plenty of that. We've seen droughts like we've never seen before. We've seen freezing weather like we've never seen before. We've the whole nine yards. And so I think at this point, if people, you know, again, like you said, Michael, I think that's an important point. When we feel helpless, when we feel hopeless, when we feel like there's nothing we can do, better to just close our eyes and pretend it doesn't exist, right? But there is something we can do, and I want to start talking about that.
Yeah, check out the zombie apocalypse instead. You know, people have said,
can
we are
expound on that a moment.
Well, distractions. Our culture is loaded with tons of distractions, and I like them too. I'm not wild about the zombie thing, but that's just me. So yeah, part of it is, you know, this is the fight for our lives and how important it is for folks to do what they want to do. Because climate change planetarily, historically, happens really fast. It's happened before for different reasons. And it doesn't happen slowly over eons where, in four centuries or so, the sun will go. You know, people think of it, the sun will burn out. Well, there's that, but
it's more like 4 billion years.
Yeah, whatever. That these things happen really, really fast. And right now we're on a speeding course to the planet heating up. But then there's people who go, but what about these terrible winters? I mean, sometimes I think of more in climate change. It's like climate disruption.
Yeah.
That things are, because we're getting heavier duty winters.
Yeah.
And in Australia, they had that massive drought. And now they've got like a Category 5 hurricane coming in.
Sure. We say climate chaos a lot.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Because it's not, I mean, we used to talk about it in terms of global warming, but exactly what you're saying is true. It's not just warming, it's chaotic. It's the superstorms, it's colder, it's hotter, it's everything all at once.
Yeah, you know, and so, I mean, I guess just speaking for myself, I think it's really important to have these large education programs and be outreaching. And so, you know, in that sense, TV shows like this are important, but they're important in an educational sense, and they're reaching an audience that is either undecided about climate change or maybe doesn't believe in it. And personally, I think that we could have some major shifts politically if we just activated people who do already believe in it. You know, I'm not necessarily interested in converting Bill O'Reilly or any of those folks over to believing in climate change. Like, I want people who already believe in it and feel hopeless about it to get out and do something about it.
To take some action, right. Mm-hmm. You know, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's recent report, the chair of the IPCC, Rajendra Pachauri, announced that no one on this planet will be untouched by climate change. Pachauri says it is severe, pervasive, and irreversible. That report warned that the rate of climate change now may be as fast as any extended warming period over the last 65 million years, and it is projected to accelerate in the coming decades. The report warns of abrupt, unpredictable, and potentially irreversible changes in the Earth's climate system with massively disruptive impacts, including the possible large-scale collapse of the Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets, collapse of part of the Gulf Stream, loss of the Amazon rainforest, die-off of coral reefs, and mass extinctions. So,
but apart from that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
I was going to say, so there's a lot to feel fairly hopeless about. But hopelessness doesn't actually help us, right? And so let's talk about, I mean, it really doesn't. So you can, you know, just sort of drink Mai Tais and walk into the sunset and forget about everything until the world burns and the zombie apocalypse comes.
If you're a privileged Westerner.
Yeah, right?
Then you can.
That's, yeah, if you're in bubble dome.
I see those, you know, it's like a sci-fi thing that they'll be in bubble domes with people.
Uh-huh, yeah. The biospheres.
Yeah.
But let's face facts, that's, as Michael points out, that's not a real possibility for many of us.
Most of us.
The planet. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of unsatisfying, right? Like, oh yeah, world's over, end game. Like what? That doesn't make any sense. So living a satisfying life, actually looking at the issues, confronting them head mm-hmm. on, not shutting your eyes because it's just a bit overwhelming, but actually looking at it, taking it for what it is, and doing one step at a time. And that brings us to the work of Portland Rising Tide. Can you talk a moment about Portland Rising Tide and the kind of work this group does?
Sure. So if for folks who maybe have never heard of Portland Rising Tide or don't know kind of who we are and what we're about, we're an all-volunteer network, totally grassroots. We have no funding except for our own grassroots fundraisers that we do. And we, our core principles are confronting the root causes of climate change, confronting market-based solutions, i.e., you know, capitalist solutions mm-hmm. to climate change, such as cap and trade, these false solutions.
We can dig into that a little bit later. Yeah.
And let's. But
so,
yeah.
And then, and we are also dedicated to, you know, organizing around principles of non-hierarchy and anti-oppression. So Rising Tide was actually started in the UK, I believe, in the early 2000s, and I could be completely wrong on that. Portland Rising Tide has been around for several years now. And we have done a lot of work, I would say. I've been organizing with Portland Rising Tide for about 2 or 3 years, so I can more speak to that. And we kind of organize around a broad spectrum of issues and engage on a spectrum of levels, right? So we've attended these kind of farcical regulatory hearings, and we submit our comments. And we also go to these agencies that rubber stamp these fossil fuel proposals. Because right now, the landscape we're looking at here in Portland and in the Northwest is export terminals primarily.
Boy, ain't it.
So our primary focus has been kind of organizing with our, using our principles to organize around these fossil fuel export terminals, which includes not only half a dozen to 10 coal export terminals, but LNG proposals.
Liquid natural gas.
Liquefied natural gas. Or as I just read the other day, liquefied fracked gas, which sounds more like what it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now we have all these oil by rail proposals coming from the Bakken Shale Field in Wyoming and Montana, and as well as tar sands and the coal. Yeah.
The lovely coal trains.
We're basically the Northwest from southern Oregon all the way to northern BC is under full-scale assault by all three of the major fossil fuels trying to get out these, tar sands oil, fracked gas, and strip mine coal out to, you know, foreign markets.
The dirtiest, stinkiest stuff you can possibly imagine. Yeah.
And so that's what we've been organizing around. And so, like I say, we engage in sort of that more mainstream environmentalist regulatory framework to some degree, but our real kind of enthusiasm lies in kind of helping our communities assume power for themselves, power of self-determination for our communities, right? Like
through direct action, correct?
We definitely do direct action. That's not the only thing we do, but we definitely endorse and engage in nonviolent direct action. And that's what it will actually be coming up. It will be a mass action in April 28th as part of the Global Climate Convergence, which is one of the things I think we're, you know, here to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we're really excited about that.
Fantabulous. I want to let people know that you are listening to KBOO. You are listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO. And you can call in with your questions at 503-231-8187. Also, you can like Positively Revolting on Facebook, where you can find us as Positively Revolting. You can also email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. Many ways to connect, many ways, and we would love for you to be a part of this conversation. Michael, before we move forward, I want to go back and before we let this thread slip. Mm-hmm. You were just talking about capitalist solutions for climate change. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you just called false solutions like cap and trade? Those things that we hear are the way that we can work with this, we can manage this.
Yeah, I mean, I can talk a little bit about that.
What is cap and trade? Let's just go with a definition.
Well, so what I can talk about is, one thing I can talk about is carbon offsetting, for instance.
Sure.
Ah, yes.
Which is
one of my favorites.
Right. That's a great one, which says that you can destroy native pristine boreal forests and poison the communities of northern Alberta, who First Nations communities have lived there for thousands of years, but you can just buy a tract of land somewhere else which is of no known, you know, resource extraction value, and that will offset your carbon impact. That offsets the carbon impact of the tar sand. So,
it's like buying forgiveness from the Catholic Church.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's exactly the same.
Papal dispensation.
Yes, just like that to me.
It is.
I'm buying an indulgence.
An
I think
indulgence.
That's what it was called.
This was before I organized with Rising Tide, but we actually had a non-monogamy offset kissing booth or something where you can donate if you cheated on your other. You can donate, and we officially absolve you of that. I want to bring that back.
I was going to say, those are the kinds of actions that we need more of.
It's like
it isn't capping and trade. Cap and trade is it's a market-based approach, and whenever you hear market-based approach, it already, my head starts spinning around a little like Linda Blair in that movie. Anyway, but it's a system by which It is said you can control, and I'm using air quotes, every word I'm saying here, I'm using air quotes in the studio.
Over the whole thing.
Which doesn't really work so well on radio, but Lynn and Michael can attest that I have bunny finger ears, bunny ear fingers. Anyway, it's an approach to control pollution by providing an economic incentive for achieving a reduction in emission, like setting on a cap on a pollution polluter, but you can go ahead and keep going up till that point. And it's just, it gets a little wacky. And to me, again, it's always hit me, all of these capitalistic, market-driven solutions, and that's the biggest air quote of them all, are ways of sort of prolonging the agony, right? It's saying that
appeasing
that we
people's.
Will not change our ways of being. We will not change industry. We will not change anything that actually has to do with hard sciences. But we're going to give it a lot of lip service. We're going to paint it green, and we're going to say capitalism's triumphant, and we'll come up with a solution to the problems it creates. I mean, to me, that's what it sort of always resonates as.
Yeah, I mean, it mostly functions as another vehicle for these companies to make profit. And, you know, capitalism, frankly, is one of the things that got us into this. And so why would we think that the same people that got us into it can
have any
get
interest.
Us out
yeah.
right.
when it's in, especially when they want to get us out by increasing their profit through a different scheme.
Right.
You know, it's kind of boggles my mind that it's, that it needs to be debated, right?
Absolutely. But apparently it does.
Apparently it does. So let's go ahead and take a couple of callers right about now.
What a good idea.
Oh, you had something else to say, didn't you, Michael?
I wanted
that was a quick intake of breath, and I can catch
yeah.
on.
I was really hoping that I could talk for just a couple minutes about the global climate convergence.
Oh, we will.
Quick.
We totally will. Don't worry. We've got another 37 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Let's go
April
ahead.
April 28th.
Okay.
That's the tease.
Let's go ahead and talk to James. Good morning, James. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. A couple things. I'm not convinced about the man-made climate change. And the reason for that is because it looks like to me that Big Brother is getting us to all unite and march off to war on the climate.
If only that were true.
I equate it with the science of eugenics. It is.
And what do you think it's manipulating us to do?
Well, it's getting us to all unite to march off to war, which gives
what war?
aid and comfort to Big Brother.
What war?
What war?
There's
the war
so many. On climate.
The war on the climate. I'm not at war on the climate. Are
so
you on,
they're
at war on the climate?
They're creating it. It's a war on climate, yes.
Michael,
you guys are going to war.
Do you know anything about this war on the climate?
I do.
Yes,
I mean,
are.
I would say that it's, I would actually say it that is it a, is the government of the United States colluding with companies like Shell and
oh,
Chevron,
BP.
The
list goes
they
on.
They are waging a war on the climate, and we're waging a war for the climate and for climate
okay.
justice.
For the planet Let's that we live on, the ground beneath our feet, the air
Let's
we breathe.
Look at it from a different perspective.
Okay, well, go ahead. You're here to provide us with that different
you
perspective.
You got about 2 minutes for that perspective.
The federal system was a decentralized economic system which gave control of the means of production
uh-huh.
to the people.
Right.
Right? Okay, we are a capitalist nation as a direct result of adopting socialist/progressive-left policy.
James, I know you always do that. I just
okay,
don't get it.
I'm just going to get back to the... Could you get to the war on the climate part and what your different perspective is without going into the economics of socialism?
Well, the point that I was going to make is that BP and all these... Corporatism is a problem.
Yes.
Capitalism, as you define it, is a problem.
Yes.
Why not restore government of the people, by the people, and for the people? Why... If corporatism and fascism or capitalism are the problem, let's focus on restoring government to the people.
Why do you think that we aren't?
Going off on this, to me, it looks like you're marching to the tune of the fascists when you're
See,
going
I,
off on
but
this
I don't understand,
war,
James.
War on-
I'm just going to go ahead and interrupt because I want to ask this question because I'm dying to know. What do you mean by that? What do you mean that we are marching towards, you know, that we are advocating fascism? I don't understand. I've heard this a couple of different times, you know, in the buzz, as it were, but I haven't really had a chance to dialogue with somebody who believed this. And I just want to spend another minute asking you, James, what do you mean by that?
Fascism is an alliance.
No, I get that. Fascism is corporatist, you know, it's the wedding.
We're that far. Next.
Got it.
Next part.
Fascism bad.
It is an alliance between...
Corporations and government.
We know that.
Alliance between government and industry.
Right. We're all there together. So why is it you think that we advocate that?
Your policies, progressive left policies since...
Tell me one.
The time of, over 100 years you guys have advocated.
Okay, I'm sorry. You can't answer my question, James. We're going to let you go.
Thank you so much for calling.
I do play again next week. And let's go ahead and move on to BJ. Good morning, BJ. You're on the air.
You know, just look up over 8th Avenue and see the clouds coming from the aircraft. One of my pilot friends says he knows about the aluminum oxide, aluminum barium that's being laid upon you. That's not pollen that you're coughing about so much as the aluminum boride that's being dropped on you. Dropped on me. Dropped
well,
on
and if
all
it mixes in with the pollen, it's really bad, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's better. Worse than it. But climate change is the main issue. The focus should be climate change.
Yes.
The war in Syria is about climate change. The extreme drought. I talked over there to people when I listened to them. They had such a drought because of climate change, they couldn't farm. They lost their our money is green, and that's not the answer.
All right. Hey, BJ, thank you very much for your call this morning.
Yeah, am I making sense?
Yeah.
Sure. You
thank
betcha.
Thank you. Michael.
Yeah.
I know, you're going to recover slowly. I just want to give you a little time to, yeah, okay, come on back with us. And now let's go ahead and focus for a moment, because I'm going to go ahead and say most people listening, we know climate change is real. Most of the people listening understand it's a big problem that we should actually do something about. And Portland Rising Tide, it's doing something. Let's go ahead and talk about the upcoming actions that Portland Rising Tide is doing. Because earlier, as we were talking about people maybe feeling despairing, people maybe feeling hopeless or helpless because it's such a freaking big issue. Or should I say fracking big issue?
some of that.
I digress. That you know, we start to feel hopeless. We start to tune out and numb ourselves. But antidote to despair is action.
That's true.
Coming up?
That, let me just say that has certainly been true for me.
True for me as well.
And so the big thing that we're organizing around right now is a Portland action for the global climate convergence, which, in a nutshell, the global climate convergence is basically trying to tie together the environmental movements and labor movements. So it's 10 days of actions from Earth Day till May Day, right? Kind of in a way like weaving those narratives together, you know, of the social justice movements and labor movements and the climate justice movements.
High time.
Yeah. And so what we have going is we are going to be meeting at Terry Shrunk Plaza at noon on April 28th. And we are going to do a little march to an undisclosed location downtown. And we're going to do some street theater. And everyone listening is welcome to attend. We have some trainings coming up and some art makes leading up to that.
Where can people find information about that?
Well, so we're on Facebook, and we also are on, we have a webpage, portlandrisingtide.org, and you can see we have a thing right on the main slider about the global climate convergence. You can click
you need
on
folks to like you on Facebook because you got kicked off, right?
We did get kicked off.
You got too
sadly
big.
Someone found out that Portland Rising Tide is not necessarily one person. So now we're an organization. So we need you to go and like us. I mean, I'm not on Facebook, so it's so I think that is the process around that. But basically, you go to Facebook, if you go to our Facebook or you go to our website, all the information that I'm going to be talking about is there. But just real quick, we do have an affinity group and action training. So basically an affinity, without getting too much into it, an affinity group is just kind of basically you and your friends. So we're going to have a training this Sunday at Laughing Horse from 11 a.m. to 4 a.m. Laughing Horse Books is on 10th and Burnside. Mm-hmm. We're also going to have an art make coming up that same afternoon. And let me just tell you real quick the background of the why, you know, behind our action on the 28th is, you know, we've seen over the last couple of years, a lot of people have gotten involved in this coal fight, mm-hmm. right? And we've seen our agencies and Governor Kitzhaber just drag the process out. And, you know, and we've also seen our governmental agencies act as a rubber stamp for these processes. It's not in their purview to say no to projects that are bad for our health if they're good for the economy, right? And that's a big problem. So we kind of need to, you know, take back power from these agencies that really have no agency. I mean, if you look at, I don't know how many people are familiar with Port Westward. There is an oil terminal there.
Nope, I'm not.
Well,
tell me about it, Michael.
So basically, a few years ago, a company got government funding to open a biorefinery, like an ethanol plant, in Clatskanie, Oregon, Port Westward. So it's a little west of Portland on the Columbia River. Well, shortly thereafter, building the facility with public subsidies, they sold out to an oil company. That oil company had a permit to move 50 million gallons of oil a year. Last year alone, they moved 300 million. So six times their permit allowance, right? And if they made a penny a gallon, right, mm-hmm. then that's $2.5 million if they make a penny a gallon. And the DEQ fined them $100,000 and said it was a massive fine and then gave them a permit application and says, well, if you want to move that much oil, just file a permit.
Increase
so,
your paperwork.
So we don't think that that's the way that our government agencies should be acting on our behalf, not to mention Department of State Lands, right. which is facilitating a lot of these projects. ODOT, you know, all of our government agencies are set up to rubber stamp these projects. And so
what do we want them to do?
So April 28th is all about taking that power back and, you know, kind of creating this people's agency that counters that narrative, right?
Right.
You know, that says like the profits of a few people, especially those based outside of Oregon, the profits of an Australian-based coal company, of a multinational conglomerate oil company, do not supersede the needs of the Oregon people.
Mm-hmm. That kind of makes sense to me. And in fact, man, it reminds me kind of about James's argument there a few minutes ago in the show, but I don't know. I'm just going to...
But we're the fascists.
But we'll just let that go into the ether, and maybe it will start affecting
so
James.
So are there actual... do we have legislative, like worded things that we actually want to have happen instead of just what we don't want to have happen? Or do they, I mean, do we want to, are we trying to introduce legislation making people the first? I know that there's the Cascadian People's Water Trust that mm-hmm. Some folks we know are working on to actually have water rights go to residents of the state first. Are there things like that are coming out of... Rising Tide or affiliates?
Yeah, we're working on a Rising Tide version of ALEC, actually. No, that's a joke.
Okay.
No.
I was almost happy about that. All right.
Oh, you're funny.
No, I mean, I certainly don't write legislation.
Well, I just wondered if you knew if there are people that are working on something like that.
No, I think there are people working on that, and I think more people need to be working on that. You know, this is kind of a full spectrum issue. We need people who are willing to, you know, lock themselves down in an office building, blockade tar sands equipment like we did a few months ago. We need people who are willing to, you know, go to the state capitol and lobby for the people. We need everybody engaging on the level that they're comfortable with, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and we probably, and we certainly, at the very least, I mean, I'm no one to get into like what the actual utopian solution is, but certainly at the very least, we need you know, a reformation of our laws and agencies that value people over profit, which is part of the whole point of the global climate convergence.
That, and that the planet is not just a resource for folks to make money from.
Right.
Let's go ahead and return to the phone lines. Let me remind people you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is your community radio station, and we are Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And this morning, our guest is Michael Gaskill. He's an organizer with Portland Rising Tide. We're talking about upcoming actions to actions of resistance to climate change. This is how I sort of worded it on some of the promotions around the show, and immediately got a comment from somebody who said, "How does one resist climate change? Like, that's a little, you can't resist the weather." But we can have actions of resistance to the root causes of the human-driven problems that are happening around us. And that's what we're seeing with Portland Rising Tide, and that's and other grassroots groups that are, in fact, eyes open and confronting some of the root causes. That's how I would look at that.
Absolutely.
So let's go ahead and take a caller. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you have questions or comments this morning. Also, we encourage you to check us out on Facebook. You can find us Positively Revolting, and you can email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com.
And you can like us on Facebook, please.
Please like us. Good morning, Red Willow. You're on the air.
Hi, Ani, Lynn, and Michael. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Morning.
The reason I'm calling this morning is, first of all, to appreciate you all and your words this morning on this. I like the idea of climate disruption better than climate change. Change isn't, it's not really depicting what is happening, I don't think. It changes more like an apocalypse.
Yeah.
But anyway, I also wanted to endorse Rising Tide. I went to an action out in Umatilla, which I thought was very effective, in that we got a bunch of people to down there together and did a group picture and moved a little bit more. We had about 30 people that were moving around there in Umatilla around the megalodon. And then finally, it was okay to not be in the group picture, and we had people then locked down to the trucks. So I felt, as a part of that action, that it was very effective, and that I would endorse Portland Rising Tide as people that are getting out there and doing something from this area.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
Very much. I remember you from out there.
Uh-huh. It was fun and cold.
That was a cold, hectic night. Cold, hectic few nights out there in Eastern Oregon.
What I'd like you to do, Michael, is to speak more about the general attitude of the group. Some people might be mistaken and think that it is something other than peaceful resistance, or they might be unaware that it's kind of an umbrella group for people of all ages, and so that there's other groups that you can be part of if you don't feel totally, you know what I mean, it's an affinity group. It gathers affinity groups. That I'd like other people to know as an older individual. And also that it gets things done. And it's the only group right now that I can see is actually out there on the street. So all good things being sent to you.
Thank you
very much, Red Willow.
Thank you.
And let's go ahead, excuse me, and take another call. Good morning, Dan. You're on the air.
Hey, folks. How are you? I'm a KBOO member, and I certainly endorse the concept of what you folks are talking about and your guests' commitment and the like, but I have to take the host to task. That guy James was obviously full of baloney, but you were awfully bullying and rude to him. And sometimes, you know, it's useful, or perhaps if nothing less, amusing to hear baloney from the other side. But the main point is, you just browbeat that poor guy and didn't let him finish a sentence, and I don't think it does our side much good, and I don't think it upholds the spirit of KBOO. And I just say this in the spirit of helpful criticism.
Sure. No, I appreciate that, Dan. I actually was trying to get him to answer a couple of questions, because I take a little exception when somebody is telling me that what we are talking about is promoting fascism, and who seems to be living in a world of reverse definitions. So I was really just trying to get him to answer a question. When he starts, and bless him, there are particular topics that he will bring every conversation back to, and really, this is not a conversation on the Federal Reserve. This is a conversation on climate disruption. So I'm sorry that it came across as browbeating. I was genuinely interested in trying to get some answers about how it is he's come to his observation that we are promoting fascism through the idea of grassroots democratic participation in resistance movements.
Well, as I said, he's obviously full of baloney, but within the time constraints for any given call, I would say give folks enough rope to hang themselves with.
All right. Well, cool enough. Thank you very much, Dan.
Talk to you again.
Cheers.
Bye.
And 503-231-8187, the number to call. Good morning, Mike. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello. Hello.
Hi. I was calling in regards to the gentleman, that one caller, who was saying about the fascism aspect.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, one of the things that the gentleman might be missing out on is the idea that if you started a wood fire within your house, you would want to let the smoke out of your house. Otherwise, you're going to change your environment and your climate. The unfortunate thing we're experiencing now is we have millions of people burning ancient sunlight, fossil fuels, whether it's coal, oil, to give ourselves energy. And I think that if we promote the aspect of hemp, which Rudolf Diesel designed the diesel motor to run on, hemp fuel, we can decentralize the oil production and use the current sunlight instead of inducing more carbon, which is then, leads to ocean acidification. And basically, we're polluting our house, our environment. This is the only earth that we have. And we are burning up all of this fuel, which produces emissions into our environment. How can people not expect it to change? We should be using the God's cleaner sun instead of the darkness of the devil, black gold, oil, and coal, and promote hemp, a renewable source, a superfood, fuel, and fiber, which will, again, decentralize the monopoly on the oil industry by producing 300 gallons per acre of fuel from him. And so I just wanted to call and say that and get that out there, and that's about it. Yeah.
All right. Hey, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
Michael, we are heading into the last quarter of the show. And for folks tuning in, I want to remind them that they are listening to Positively Revolting. And we are talking with you because you are a volunteer and an organizer with Portland Rising Tide. And Portland Rising Tide has a couple of things coming right up. So if folks have been concerned, but they haven't known how to plug in, they haven't known what to do, but they are looking for other folks to talk with and work with about resistance to the root causes of climate change, how can people plug into Rising Tide?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you phrased it like that. Sometimes I am not good at all the aspects of plugging our organization. And so again, we are having this kind of mass street theater style action to kind of wrest power away from an ineffective governor and rubber stamping regulatory agencies on April 28th, where we're meeting at Terry Shrunk Plaza at noon. And we also have a training, a really great kind of action training / affinity group formation training on Sunday from 11 to 4 at Laughing Horse Books. We also have an art make for the street theater the same day, this Sunday, from, I believe, it is, I believe, 3 to 7, and that's at 4101 Northeast Sumner Avenue. And if you have any questions about this, first of all, you can reach out to us on Facebook, or you can email us at portland@risingtidenorthamerica.org, or you can just go to our website and click on Get Involved. And that's actually what we really, the whole goal of most of the things that we do is to get more people involved, actually, and to empower more people to kind of become leaders. You know, like we, like I'm not a leader, but through my organizing, you know, I've
lead yourself, I think.
Learn to, you know, like become a more effective organizer and help empower other people, right? And so if I could just say a couple of words about kind of how we operate as a
Please
group.
Do.
You know, I mentioned that we're non-hierarchical, which means that we operate on consensus model, and we have open meeting structures, right? And so if you want to plug in, we want you in our group. You know, we have two or three dozen people active and a lot of people that kind of come in and out as they're able. And you can, again, just go to our website or Facebook, click on Get Involved, and we will do everything we can to help empower you.
And yeah, what does, for folks that don't know what consensus is, what a consensus model for an organization is, you want to just a little bit about that, just because that's kind of important.
It involves a lot of hand motions, which is like an inside joke. If you don't know what consensus is, you probably don't get that. Anyway,
then that joke doesn't make any sense. But Michael and I were both facilitators at Occupy. In the interest of full disclosure, Michael and I have made many a hand signals at each other and a whole bunch of other people at the same time.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, in a nutshell, consensus is just, you know, another attempt. It's an attempt to address everyone in the room, right? It's not just if you have 51 votes out of 100, the motion passes.
Say, yeah.
It's
what's the
well, you
the difference between majority rule and consensus rule.
Consensus is in general at least 90%, and sometimes it has to be 100% of people agreeing. And you know, kind of the idea of that is that we all want to be on the same page, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that is kind of one of our modus operandi, if you want. And so we have all Rising Tide meetings. We have working groups. Right now we have several working groups. And that's kind of where most of our work lies, because when you have 30 people in a room together, sometimes not as much gets done. But so we have an action working group. We have an outreach and events working group, art working group, research. You know, we have a lot of different places
Something
for people.
Something for everyone, it sounds like.
Absolutely. A lot of different places for people to plug in and get involved. And I would just say go to the website, click on Get Involved, or email us at portland@risingtidenorthamerica.org.
All right. And let's go ahead. Excuse me. Let's go ahead and take one more call. What do you think, Lynn?
I think it's a good idea.
Let's talk to Harry, shall we? Good morning, Harry. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Thank you for this informative program. Climate change, I believe, is caused by overpopulation. And does your organization have anything to mention about overpopulation? We have 7 billion people on this planet,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
they're all breathing in and out five times every minute, and our activities. Driving cars and everything else. Is there the population bomb? Is that what's causing climate change?
Well, what I would say is that can be a sensitive issue, because you look at the United States, which is a relatively low percentage of the population, somewhere around, what are we, 5% of the global
maybe, yeah.
population, and yet we account for some ridiculous percentage, like 25% of global carbon emissions. So you can see that in this case of fomenting climate change, population is not the main driver. you know, and that being said, like, of course, if any population gets too big for its environment, you know, that is an issue. But I would say the primary driver behind climate change is not population. It's actually, it's actually corporate fueled consumption, which I don't want to conflate with it being a consumer issue, like population, or I mean, climate change is not a consumer issue, right? It's about changing the structures.
Well, and one child in America consumes so much more if they're remotely affluent at all than five or six children in another country.
Right. You know, so yes, country. There is a carrying capacity to our planet and for any being, but that's not the primary driver, I don't think.
Hey, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I want to remind people that
more is coming up this morning on
Indeed.
Cable.
Indeed. Oh, look, I did a little quick searching for the stats. Michael, you are so dang good. 5%, we have 5% of the world's population, and we consume 26% of the
Boom.
Check you out. You've read up. Okay, so coming up this morning on KABU on 9 o'clock, Political Perspectives host Rachel Bennett speaks with Alex Proudhomme about his book, The Ripple Effect, The Fate of Freshwater in the 21st Century. At 9:30, we'll hear about this week's community forum on child sex trafficking in Portland at the First Unitarian Church. I think I'm hosting that program coming up at 9:30. Anyway, at 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia will air, and you'll hear headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, on Flashpoints, 64 years after Edward Murrow's Harvest of Shame broadcast, and farm workers and their families are still devastated by government policies. We'll hear about multiple impacts of NAFTA on farm workers and their families. At 11 o'clock on The Digital Divide, host Rabia Yemen speaks with Brad Burge of MAPS, and it's an organization about the recent results and ongoing medical clinical trials of LSD and MDMA, plus new updates about marijuana research. Thanks, KABU members, for your generous support. If you're not a member yet, you can become one right now. Just go over to kboo.fm and click donate today. Well, we only have a few minutes left. It happens so fast.
It does indeed.
It does indeed.
Yeah.
So I want to give Michael one more chance to talk about what it is that's coming up on Sunday, and then on the 28th. We do have Joel. We could maybe squeeze Joel in for a real quick comment, but I want Michael to have. Let's go ahead. Squeeze Joel in first. Then we'll wrap up. Good morning, Joel.
Thank you.
You made it. You're under the finish line.
Yeah, so the real quick comment. Yeah, what's going on with James, I think I can just set the light on it, is, and it should be admitted, I think you should preference the conversation with a rejection of that of science, of rejecting that we can come to know things. I'm bringing his book, Understanding Power, by Chomsky. And anyway, it goes into these kind of things like, you know, he should acknowledge that he is concocting his own theory.
Sure. Joel, I'm going to let you go, though, because we do only have a couple minutes left. I really want to focus on climate change and not the pathology of James. Okay, so.
I'm focusing on that. Anyway, that's
cool.
The science. I mean, that you can understand the world. Anyway, that's all.
Cool.
Thank you so
get
much,
you.
Joel.
Thanks. Mike. You two are just sort of barreling in right there. The finish line, it's you, photo
so,
finish.
PortlandRisingTide.org, like us on Facebook. We have a training, Laughing Horse Books, 11 to 4 p.m. this Sunday.
A training for?
For, we have a training geared towards this mass action on April 28th for the Global Climate Convergence. Come join us. Represent Oregon, be it a cross section of an
fun.
Oregonian
you guys really...
plant, animal. Yeah, it's going to be really fun street theater. Terry Shrunk Plaza at noon on April 28th.
So, and street theater. This is one of the things that's caught my attention with Portland Rising Tide protests. It's not like there's 3 dozen people or even 5 dozen people holding signs and sort of walking back and forth with a chant that starts out with, you know, a slogan repeated, should never be depleted. Or wait, what? Back to that. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, it's
no, we try to make it fun.
I've noticed.
I mean,
we try to make
it
fun.
We throw down when it's time to throw down, but we also, you know, it's got to be fun, right? We want to be creative. We want you to get involved, and we want people to, we just, you know, right, like you're saying, can't be the necessarily the same tactic every time. Sometimes it's got to be fun and creative.
In fact, I would go ahead and throw in there that it always has to be fun and fun and creative. Just like
that music.
Our
just
music.
Like Chumbawamba.
But you know, I think that it has been said that if it's not fun, it's not sustainable. And I think that when we started out the show, Michael, talking about how numbed people are, how when they start feeling hopeless and overwhelmed, they tune out. It takes, I think it takes some theater. I think it takes the action of spectacle to actually reach through that numbing factor sometimes. And so I am always excited to see groups that have decided to try new, innovative, and creative things to reach the public consciousness and broaden discourse.
So, all right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, that's always a plus in my book. Have fun and change the world all at the same time.
All at the same time. It can be done.
And thank you very much, Michael, for joining us this morning. Again, contact information for Portland Rising Tide.
PortlandRisingTide.org, or like us on Facebook, email us at Portland@RisingTideNorthAmerica. Thank you for having me.
You are
thank
so
you
welcome.
For being here.
And tune in next week when we'll be positively revolting as ever.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Mellow Mood Fridays, a live reggae music series, March 28th, April 4th, and 11th. Featuring artists Synergy, Adrian Xavier, The Rising Buffalo Tribe, Positive Vibes, Papawastic, Jesse Genda, Archangel, and the African Foundation Crew. Roots, Reggae, and Dancehall. Jamaican, African, regional, and island vibes, dancing, and positive community times. For more information, visit hawthornetheater.com. Sponsored by Mellow Mood Pipe, Mike Thrasher presents KBOO Community Radio, Just Some Reggae Folk, and EMET events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Sold Out Music Festival happening now until April 20th at venues all over Portland. The Sold Out Music Fest seeks to bring together people of all generations and backgrounds to celebrate the music that helps to bind our collective culture together. Legends of New Orleans jazz, the luminaries of Brooklyn hip-hop, the queen of modern soul music, and more are performing together under one banner. Bands, venues, bios, and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:01 a.m. Coming up on Political Perspectives, host Rachel Bennett speaks with Alex Prudhomme, Prudhomme about his book, The Ripple Effect, The Fate of Freshwater in the 21st Century. At 9:30, we'll hear about this weekend's community forum on child sex trafficking in Portland at the First Unitarian Church. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, 64 years after Edward R. Murrow's Harvest of Shame broadcast, and farm workers and their families are still devastated by government policies. We'll hear about the multiple impacts of NAFTA on farm workers and their families. At 11 on The Digital Divide, host Rabia Yeaman speaks with Brad Burge of the MAPS organization about the recent results and ongoing medical clinical trials with LSD and MDMA, plus news updates about marijuana research. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a member, you can fix that when you go to kboo.fm and click where it says Donate Today. Stay tuned.
Hello, KBOO listeners. Today, I'm going to be speaking with Alex Prudhomme, the author of the book The Ripple Effect, The Fate of Freshwater in the 21st Century. Alex, welcome to the studio.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Your book, The Ripple Effect, is an informative and engaging book exploring various water-related issues. You underwent a lot of research traveling into the field to investigate the topics that you've written about and conducting interviews with the people who are involved with these issues. And I'm curious about what it was like to write the book and investigate these stories.
Well, it was a really fabulous experience. It began back in the mid, 2005 or so, when I met a hydrogeologist called Bob Moran. And he's kind of an Indiana Jones of water. He goes around the world doing all sorts of interesting water projects. And I had thought about doing a book or at least an article about bottled water, which was a huge phenomenon at that point. And he said, yeah, bottled water is interesting, but really, when you think about it, that's just one little aspect. Water is this huge subject. He called it an access resource, meaning that it's the kind of thing that underlies every other resource. So, you know, whether you are growing rice, or you're fabricating computer chips, or you're hydrofracking for gas, or you're mining for gold, or building homes, or farming, or whatever. All of these things require fresh water. And, you know, as the droughts in California and Texas are showing us, as climate change comes on, as the population grows, as we change our diets, there may not be enough water to do all of these things at once. And that's already causing so-called water war. So water underlies every other resource. And there may not be enough water to do all the things we like to do at once. And that's going to force us to make very difficult choices about how we allocate resources. And we've traditionally, especially in the West, had so-called water wars between the states over who gets to use how much water. If you look at the Colorado River, for example, seven states plus Indian tribes plus Mexico all rely on that one river, and it's taken years of negotiation to work that out. And now the river's being hit by drought, and that's just exacerbating the problem. So my friend Bob Moran said, look, water is the story of the century. And so I, being a good journalist, I followed the story. I went up to Poland Springs in Maine, and I learned about the bottled water wars. I went down to New Orleans and learned about the levees that had failed in Hurricane Katrina. I went to Las Vegas, where Lake Mead has dropped 100 feet. I met the billionaire T. Boone Pickens in Dallas, Texas, who wants to privatize the Ogallala Aquifer and sell its water to the highest bidder. I went up to Sacramento, where the experts fear a mega flood that would be much worse than Hurricane Katrina. And then I went out to the Alaskan bush to investigate a water war that pits the last pristine sockeye salmon fishery in the world against a giant copper and gold mine. And as I went along, I discovered that the quality and the quantity of our water has undergone some significant changes lately, but that the public really has no idea about this. So I thought that rather than doing an article, I would do a book. And so I dove in. And it took me 3.5 years. It was a major project, but a really illuminating one.
Well, I'm glad you did. It was such an informative and engaging book. And part of the reason that I was moved to interview you right now is that there's a global water summit happening in Paris. Well, it just happened this week. And I tried looking into some media sources and finding information on it, but I never really found much information on it, and I was wondering what your take on it is.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is that there are these kinds of water summits or convocations pretty much every year, and I don't go to them. They tend to be gatherings of people who sit around and talk a lot, and sometimes some good comes out of that. I mean, it's good to raise awareness and to educate people, but often there's not a lot of action that comes out of those things. The United Nations has done very well with its water work. It's an ambitious program to help eradicate disease, waterborne disease, and to bring more potable water to people. But when I was reporting all across the country and looking at what was going on around the world, I realized that there really needs to be action. And so I sometimes feel like the crazy person up on a roof yelling and shouting and saying, you know, hey, look, people, don't take your water for granted. It's really going to be the most important resource of this century, I think, even more than oil. And we really need to pay attention, and we need to start thinking about water in a new way. We need to protect our supplies, and we need to promote sustainable use.